RadioMD.
RadioMD.com.
Your eyes are the window to your health. Time to learn more with Dr. Robert Abel Jr., the Wizard of Eyes.
So, folks, let's talk about what's the current status of facial cosmetic surgery. We know a lot of people are interested in it. People hate aging. And the one thing they do is look in the mirror all the time and they see the wrinkles and the droopy lids, the furrows in their brow. Then they see every president never wearing glasses and they wonder what's going on. And then they see every newscaster has no wrinkles. I mean, some of the people are so frigid and rigid that you wonder what is happening. Well, I'm planning to have Ari Abel, a wonderful cosmetic facial surgeon, but also a well-trained ophthalmologist from Johns Hopkins and a plastic surgery fellowship. And he's going to share with you and me some of the interesting aspects of facial cosmetic surgery. For instance, Ari, tell us, what are the components of facial and lid surgery?
So the components of facial and lid surgery, when you break them down, and this is what I've sort of learned through now being in practice for almost 15 years, is that you do break the components down to forehead, eyes, and lower face and neck. So in a sense, you do have to break those components down because based on what you're treating, they are very separate. So when patients come in and they say, I want everything fixed, the way I look at these things is I sort of step back, try to let them think a little bit more conservatively and decide, tell me what bothers you the most, and then we can sort of work on those segments one at a time.
Now, some things are covered by medical insurance.
Correct.
And what might they be?
So really, to be honest with you, the only thing that's covered by medical insurance these days is upper eyelids. So one of three things, the most common, someone has excess eyelid skin that is overlapping the lashes and interfering with the peripheral vision. If we can document on clinical photographs and on a visual field, which shows that they actually have functional visual loss, and then when you tape the eyelids up, that goes away, that can be covered. Someone has a little bit more of a congenital thing. Someone has actually a droopy eyelid, the AKA what we used to call the lazy eye, which I don't think is very politically correct anymore. Someone has a loose eyelid muscle, which can be raised. And then the sort of the outlier is a low brow, usually someone who's had a facial palsy or a Bell's palsy. In terms of lower eyelids and the rest of the face, nothing else is covered.
So if somebody has an Asian or Oriental slanted eye and want that fixed, that would not be covered?
That depends. That's actually an excellent question, because you're dealing with a completely different anatomy. So in a sense, they can be covered. You're usually not going to have the skin hanging over as much, because based on their anatomy, the skin's already hanging over, and that's probably going to interfere with the vision. But they can actually have a weak muscle. A little bit more difficult to get them covered, but they can be covered.
And going a little bit off the course here, what about a child that's born with a droopy lid that might affect their ability to see long term? How young would you operate on someone?
Personally for me, in my training, we actually worked on children as young as about a year. Personally, at this point in my practice, we have Aya DuPont here, which does an excellent job with pediatrics. Personally for me, I'm looking at about 11, 12 years old. Based on what I do, I like the patient to be able to interact with me. I also think that when you have a child, that's a great point, because if you don't, basically, from what they teach us, by the age of 7 to 8, your children's vision is pretty much implanted in the brain. If a child does not get a clear vision of objects that are centered on the retina by 7 or 8 years of age, so thus, if an eyelid is drooping and blocking that child will probably never have normal vision. So those children often need to be fixed much earlier, sometimes at 1, 2, 3 years old. I personally don't do those at this point in my career, but they are very fixable. The difficult part is since you can't have them interact with you and sort of look at the height when you're adjusting it, especially in surgery, there are a lot more repeat surgery. There's definitely more repeat surgery and redos. So, for example, often a child, if the child has a surgery at about the age of 2 or 3, by the time the child is a teenager, they probably had 3 or 4 surgeries. But those are definitely coverable procedures, and those are probably the most important things to fix.
So, moving on, tell me about what is the frequency of facial and lid surgery? Let's take facial plastic surgery today from 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Is it declining? Is it increasing?
I find it that it's definitely increasing. I think that, you know, some of this does sort of sway with the economy, but I think it sort of holds strong. And what I do find is that there's a couple things. I find that people are a little bit more conservative, and maybe that is because there's so much media coverage. And with the way social media works nowadays, they have much more exposure. So they learn more about risks, effects. I find that people watch videos on the internet and actually can sort of scare them away. So I find that people are very interested, yet they would like to do the more non-invasive regimens first. So, for example, they'll come in and they'll say, you know, I've got this little turkey gobbler on my neck. What can you do to fix it? And if you start in with surgery, you've lost them. They're not really interested because, and the other thing is, they need, in this day and age, I mean, more people are working longer in their lives. There aren't as many stay-at-home mothers, so people can't take the time off to recover from these type of things. And they're also a little bit more concerned about going back to work with, you know, black and blue eyes. On the flip side, that has also increased the volume because as people are aging, they're finding that they want to look younger to compete with the workforce. Someone's in their late 50s, early 60s, getting a new job. They're concerned that how they look is going to affect the possibility of them being hired. So I think it's increasing, yet I find that people are looking for more alternatives and are willing to come back multiple times versus having one single surgery.
Well, one of the reasons I'm asking these questions is I look as an ophthalmologist that we see the incidence of LASIK plummeting, that it was great. It was very cliche and catchy and had a lot of sachet originally. And people said, this is great. And if they have the right prescription, like over 3 units of myopia, they're missing out on things. But then people realize that after a while, they may need a repeat or they lost their reading vision. And if they're under 3 diopters, they always can read without glasses, and so they don't want to take the chance. So obviously what you're saying is they watch videos, they look at risks, etc. So cosmetic surgery, looking at the face, people want it more because they're living longer and have disposable income. And looking at LASIK, well, it's too late. By the time they have disposable income, they're not going to gain everything they want out of it. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, and I think, you know, if you look at LASIK from someone who doesn't do LASIK surgery, but you're correct, I'm an ophthalmologist, I think LASIK is an all or none. It's not like you can go halfway. It's not like you're saying, hey, you know what, I want to go from 20/200 where I can't see the alarm clock till I can squint and see the alarm clock, and you're going to have less risk. With facial cosmetic surgery, you can do Botox. You can do fillers. You can do things that are going to wear off. So if you don't like them, it's going to go away. So in a sense, I think as long as you can make sure that the patient is comfortable with that outcome, they're more comfortable with taking less risk and maybe not getting the same amount of outcome.
Well, it's great to hear from an expert. And since I and friends of mine have experienced wonderful results from the expert, it's also important the communication skills you have. And I want to thank you very much, Ari, for being on again and look forward to talking to you again about these interesting subjects. I'm Dr. Rob Abel, the Wizard of Eyes, on the RadioMD.com. For more information on this segment or any of my segments, visit my show page at RadioMD.com. Thank you for listening. Keep looking well, seeing well, and of course, stay well.